This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to 1. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. Wednesday's Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist, is our guest. Welcome again, Terry.
Glad to be back. The week flies by, doesn't it?
It really
does.
Or is
it just me because you're working every day? I love being on.
I know you do, and we're so glad you join us every Wednesday. We'll take you until almost 12:45 today, so let's dive right in. Tell me what the latest is on stimulus and the markets. What's catching your eye today?
Okay, a couple of things. Let's start with stimulus. Everybody seems to have an interest and comes here to hear about it. I'm beginning to get a lot of posts on my blog. I haven't gotten my stimulus check yet. Please, patience, please. I remember saying this last year, too. I talked with the IRS yesterday. They declined to tell me exactly when they expect them all to be out, and that's when, of course, you'd start worrying if you didn't get yours. But they said they're still going out, so the word is patience. Secondly, many people, here's what they're working on now most, I think, is what they call plus-up payments, which is to say, if they sent your stimulus check but it wasn't the full amount, back in February, early March, say, because they looked at your 2019 return and you have since filed your 2020 return, they're matching those returns and going, oh, look at this poor person had a terrible 2020. They should get the full $1,400, and they'll send you the difference if you got less than the full amount or didn't get anything at all because of your 2019 income. And the same thing, by the way, I should mention is with regard to tax refunds. Now, number one, by the way, they're still paying out refunds on returns filed in the summer, last summer, the 2019 refunds. Returns were, you know, supposed to be filed in July. They moved that back to July. Many people haven't gotten those. At least you're getting interest. But others have said to me, wait, I filed, and I even filed electronically in March, and usually I get my refund back in 4 or 5 weeks, maybe in days. If you filed your direct deposit information, your banking information, you will be getting that refund immediately. But even if you filed electronically but didn't have direct deposit for your check on there, then you're going to wait a little longer. I'm going to give you a very Terry Savage attitude kind of a thing. I think the IRS, I'm going to compliment them again. They're doing a great job. They're handling tax returns, stimulus checks, checking if the stimulus checks are right, and so forth, as well as refunds. And I would guess that there's a lot more pressure on the IRS from Congress, political pressure, I mean, to get stimulus checks out than to get tax refunds out. So I think the focus now is still on stimulus checks. They only 2 weeks ago started doing them to Social Security and other government benefits recipients. So a lot of people have said, well, I haven't gotten mine yet. Let's give them another 3 or 4 weeks, and then I will promise you to put on a full court press to find out if there are still a lot of people that haven't gotten them, how to deal with it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from somebody that did get that one up, whatever you call that, where the...
Plus up, yes.
Plus up. If you did, if that happened to you, 312-981-7200. If you have a question generally, 312-981-7200. And one thing about all that, Terry, a couple of listeners have already texted in, and they said, why did some people get credit cards and not checks for the stimulus? Is there any rhyme or reason to how this stimulus was paid out?
That's one of the great mysteries. That's one of the great mysteries of the universe. I had so many questions for them, I must say, that I never asked, but they have never said that there's any particular rhyme or reason to why that white envelope from the U.S. Treasury had a debit card in it or a paper check. I just don't know. I think the reason a lot more people got debit cards this time around was because their check writing abilities were so stressed out. Remember when this new America Cares, the $1,400 stimulus, American Reform or whatever it is, gosh, I can't keep track, but when this one went out, they had like 10 days to get them basically all out.
Yeah.
And so I think that was just by chance.
Dow's up 232, S&P's up. Any comments on where the markets are today? We flirt every day with record levels.
I was just about to say, then there's Dr. Bob, who's holding on to his 40,100, and boy, oh boy, we're going to have champagne for that celebration. Look, we're at 34,000 now. Remember, he was predicting 33 for opening day of baseball. A year ago, I just looked back, we were at 24,000. On the Dow, and people were thinking it was the end of the world. So my overall message is, if you're appropriately diversified, you have enough chicken money on the side, you have a long time horizon and a long retirement ahead of you, you just don't let Netflix's number of new subscribers.
Yes.
Adjust your fear of the market.
Yes. Now that's happening too. Wintrust Business Lunch continues. Terry Savage is our guest. The phone lines are busy, Terry. You ready to take some calls?
Ready to go.
Okay. We'll start with Claudia today. Thanks for calling, Claudia. You're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi, John. Hi, Terry.
Hey.
My question is regarding, student loans and refinancing our mortgage. So my daughter's going to start school in the fall. She's undecided between an in-state school and out-of-state school. So depending on what she chooses, loans are going to be higher in one than the other. Dad and I are contributing $13,000 to $15,000 to tuition, and everything else is on her. So, but we're also at a point where we're thinking of refinancing our home, and we're not sure whether or not that's the right move, if we're going to be co-signing for any loan, or you know, anything like that with the college finances. So we're kind of just in limbo. Do we refinance? Do we wait? What do you think? What do you suggest?
Wow, this is kind of complicated, so I'm trying to unravel this and figure out where to start. Let me start with the home mortgage. And I was just looking at the numbers this morning. Interest rates were very low. Then they popped back up for the month of March, and they dropped in the last 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, the average, I'm just reading this, for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages decreased to 3.2% from 3.27%. So we've had a little tick down in mortgage rates. Now, if you refinance your mortgage, the portion that you might, and you would take out some equity, presumably. First of all, you should definitely, everybody, you're getting
another chance to refinance your mortgage. Yeah, actually, we're not taking out equity. We have those funds set aside already for college, so we're not looking to pull any equity out of the home or that. Yeah,
well, wait a second. Let me finish my answer, okay? If you did take money out, you would be paying 3% or so interest. It wouldn't be deductible, that portion that you use to pay for college for your child. That's one. I feel like I'm making a recipe that has two ingredients. Then you set that aside, and in a bowl, you break two eggs and add the vanilla and whisk it. All right, here's the second part of it. I'm disturbed by when you say that your daughter, that you've put aside $13,000 to $15,000, in other words, per year. So maybe you've got $60,000 or so saved over a 4-year education, and that the amount she will have to borrow depends on which school she chooses. So you're not. I don't like the way you're approaching this, because I think this is where parents step up and say, "Look, you realize the impact. Let's just presume that one school overall cost is $30,000, the other school's overall cost $40,000. I don't think you need to go to FinAid, FINAID.org, and use their calculators and see how much money she's going to be repaying at current student loan rates, which are higher than what, by the way, you might pay if you paid cash for education. And I would propose this, because that impact of her taking out student loans, first of all, she won't get enough to fill the gap. So you're probably going to co-sign some loans in addition to that. All those rates are going to be so high. If it were my daughter, I'd say this. We have $15,000 a year for your school. Pick the school that has $20,000, costs $23,000. Either live at home for 2 years and we'll pay in full, or if you pick the school that's less expensive, you won't need to take out student loans. We'll take equity out of our home. I mean, once you see what paying off student loans for 10 or 20 or more years, how that interest piles up, and the burden that you hear everybody talking about, I'm out of school. I can remember the statistic, but 2/3 of the people, they're out of school for 10 years or more, owe more on their balance on their student loans than they originally borrowed because of the interest. So I think it's time where parents stand up and say, honey, let's go on FinAid.org. Let's show that if you have to borrow this much, both the federal student loans and if we have to borrow for the gap beyond the cash we have, here's the kind of interest we'll pay out over just 10 years, much less 20. Why don't you do this? Live at home for 2 years or go to the in-state school. We can finance that if you'll go to the in-state school.
I want to ask a question about this situation. Let me ask this question just in general. If you are refinancing and you're borrowing money at 3%, that's a good place to get money for college if you don't already have it in the bank, right?
Absolutely.
So
now mortgage interest is deductible, but not if it's used to pay, not if it's in the last couple of years.
Still, but the borrowing cost is less than it would be if you went on the open market. So that's very
half
cheap
of the
money.
Cost.
Okay, let's just let her comment one more time. Then, Claudia, what are you thinking now?
Well, yeah, now I'm thinking that maybe we should pull some equity out of the home. Our current interest rate, the reason we wanted to refinance is we're at 4.25%. And I know that interest rates had dropped. I know we kind of dropped the ball a little by waiting. We should have gotten in a little bit earlier. But it was always that mentality of, like, how is this going to affect us or affect the financing of my daughter's college. But now I'm just like, we need to do something. We can't just sit on this. So now the idea of, after listening to Terry, the idea of possibly pulling equity out of the home and taking care of financing that way sounds like the smarter thing to do.
Okay, just don't ruin your retirement by being unable to retire because you have such a large mortgage payment. Don't extend the maturity of your mortgage by much. Consider a 15-year mortgage. The rate will be lower. And number two, have some discipline. Teach your daughter about some choices. About if she goes home to school, stays in state to school, she won't have student loans to pay. And when you see the numbers, I hope she'll make a sensible choice. Okay?
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much, Terry. Thanks, King John.
I ain't king yet. And by the way, I was talking to David Hochberg yesterday about a 30-year fixed mortgage, and he quoted me 2.875, 30-year fixed.
So, oh, because you're the king and you must have terrific credit. Mortgage average, I'm reading it on CNBC, is 3.2%.
Let's pick up another. Oh, by the way, Terry, we were asking about that. What do you call it, the plus up thing?
Yes.
John, I just got my plus up. I didn't get it in 2020. Newly divorced, filed my 2020 taxes early April, and now I have my stimulus. I got my plus up. I'm glad to hear that. How about that?
Great. It's working. It's working. And I tell you, the IRS is, and everybody who's waiting is going, they're not doing a good job. But in general, the millions upon hundreds of millions of checks they're sending out, doing a good job.
Cecily, you had a question for our guest. What can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hi, Terry. Yes, my husband and I owe taxes this year. It was early April when we filed. I think it was April 3rd. And we chose to pay through letting the IRS automatically take the amount from our bank account. And we're still waiting for them to withdraw that money. Obviously, soon.
Well, if you're earning about 0.25% interest on it while you wait, I noticed that. I send in a check. I don't like them coming in my bank account, but I had to send in a very nice check. And it was a significant enough amount. That was really my quarterly estimate, I guess it was. And it was a significant enough amount that I thought they would grab that and deposit it right away. And it really did take longer than expected. Again, they're very, very busy. You're not going to earn much interest on the money in the bank, but they'll get around to getting the money. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry. They'll get your money. Although, boy, my experience has always been that it seems like I'm still at the mailbox I sent it from, and the check clears.
That's what surprised me.
It's the fastest thing you've ever seen. Cecily, good luck to you. I hope they take your money. Dale, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Dale? You're on the air.
Well, I filed my taxes. I had my taxes done before the February 12th deadline, and I filed them electronically, and a week later I checked, and it said, we've received your taxes, but I haven't gotten my refund yet. It's been 10 weeks.
Dale, did you put in your direct deposit banking information?
Yes. I've been doing that the same way for years and years. It's just,
and they typically
just
deposit
patient,
it right there.
Is there
back?
Something I should be worried about?
Yeah.
I'd be annoyed, not worried. Give it a little more time.
Okay.
But I'm surprised. I must say I'm surprised because my impression from talking with them is that if you put in your direct deposit information, I would check with your bank and see if there was an attempt to deposit directly. I'd take a look. You have a copy of that return. Make sure that your banking information, the routing and the account number were correct, because that should be there by now.
Thank you, Dale. Good luck to you. Be annoyed, not and patient. Hey, Terry, I need a short answer. Can I open a retirement account for my 19-year-old granddaughter?
Did she work? Did she have earned income? Any amount of earned income? If she did, up to the amount, let's say she earned you're not camp counselors last summer, but that was my old example. She earned $2,000 doing something, part-time work. She spent all that money. But if she earned $2,000, You can open an IRA for her, go to Fidelity or Vanguard. The maximum amount you could put in is $2,000. Reminder, she can't take it out till she's 59 and a half. And that's a great way to get a child started. Wow. But only if they had earned income.
Really? I mean, I'm sorry. What if they didn't work at all? You can't put money in a sheltered account?
No. IRA contributions can only be made based on earned income. And at her age, she could put in, I mean, if she made $6,000, she could put $6,000 in. And it doesn't have to come from that $6,000 that she blew on clothes or whatever. But if you have earned income, you can put an IRA contribution in.
I got that, but I answer this question when we come back. All right, say the kid made no money. Say the kid's 9 years old. I want to put some money in some retirement plan for them and have it start to grow. What's a grandparent to do? Terry Savage, the Wednesday guest. And this texter, Terry, said, I got a $2,800 payment for me and my 20-year-old daughter. A week later, she received a $1,400 payment. Will she have to pay that back?
Yay. This is one of the more amazing things from the IRS this year. I mean, put gold stars and lights around it. They made some mistakes, and they know it. Mistakes just like the one you described, where they looked at the 2019 return and saw you and your husband, or just you alone and your dependent child, and sent you immediately $2,800, $1,400 each. And then they looked at your dependent daughter's 2020 return and went, oh, she didn't make enough money. We'll send her $1,400. They know they did that, and they promised me. I asked them three times, John. I mean, I responded to their email. I looked at what they said online. I went back to the IRS guy and said, wait, I really just want to make sure, because I'm going to tell a lot of people this. It's okay if they keep that money. Yes, it's okay. Keep it. As long as you weren't trying to defraud them, they've said you may keep the money.
I don't even know how you would pay it back. I mean, that should not have happened.
That's another story.
Yeah. And so, you know, my flip answer, but there's I think modicum of wisdom in this is then go ahead and stimulate. You got it because you were supposed to stimulate the economy. So stimulate. Go do something. Spend it.
Exactly. Or save it and pay down your debt.
Okay. And by the way, the idea that some people save it or pay off their credit cards has been seen as a measure of inefficiency in the stimulus program. It sort of defeats the purpose. But I don't know that it does, because a person who's paid down their credit card debt now has more opportunity to use their credit card.
Yeah, room to spend. Absolutely. And I want to just get in a plug for something we discussed last week. It's the latest column at TerrySavage.com. I won't go into depth. But millions of Americans and many, many thousands of Chicagoans are considered unbanked. They're scared of banks. They don't think they have enough money to go to a bank. There isn't a bank in their neighborhood. They don't have a bank account. What they're doing with these stimulus checks, and you talk about, it could be $2,800. A family with two kids could be $5,600. They're going to the currency exchange and paying a fortune to cash those checks, plus they're carrying cash. That's dangerous, and you'll blow it. I just want everybody to know, this may not be you because you have a bank, because you're listening to WGN Noon Business Hour, but somebody you run across, whether it's the doorman, the errand person, these are typically people who are low-income people who work for cash maybe. They don't have bank accounts. They can get a free bank account at Wintrust. Our sponsor has an absolutely free checking account with a debit card. You can go to any ATM and they'll repay you, so you use that debit card to take out money to pay your bills or take out cash at any ATM. Chase charges $4.95 a month. That's far less than people are paying in credit card fees. So encourage someone, because, yeah, these people need the money for food. They need the money to pay back rent. So they're probably going to spend that money, but not all at once, not in cash, not walking around with cash and paying huge fees. It's time to go find someone who you think might not have a bank account. Let them know they only have to go once. Just wants to open the account by depositing that check. They'll get their debit card. They never have to go back to the bank.
Her article on that is titled, Don't Cash That Check. This is Bob. You're on WGN. Bob, what can we do for you?
Hello?
Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hey, hi, John. It's Terry. My question has to do with saving for college, Terry. How much is too much saving for college? I have two daughters. One starting freshman high school, one in grammar school, saved since they were born. Don't want to run a problem if, you know, they get eight or something, or am I hurting myself by saving too much? a weird question.
Well, it depends, Bob. Where are you saving that money? Are you saving it in a 529 college savings account, or are you just putting it in your own money market account?
No, I have 529s, and I also have Coverdales for them.
Oh, well, I go have more children because you're a great parent to have money saved up to pay for your kids. I'm not worried about you having too much money saved up for a college education. One of them is going to want to go on to graduate school. That's the least of your problems. You take a look. Go on to one of the best places might be at fineaid.org and look at the cost of college today. And college costs keep rising every year. That may diminish a little, but for sure the costs are going to keep going up. Just keep saving.
Yeah, but is there a penalty for if you're in one of those programs and then the kid doesn't go to school or you've oversaved? Imagine that. You can't use that money but for education, right?
Well, that's true, but now you have a beginning of a 529 account for your first grandchild. So think about this. By the time your kids are out of school at age 22 and there's $12,000 left over, they either go on to graduate school or it can be used for any member of the family. And so that money can keep growing and you'll name a new beneficiary, your first grandchild, when that grandchild is born.
College right now is about $30,000 a year times four. That's $120,000 times two kids, $250,000. That's going to go up every year. It's been going up faster than inflation. And maybe those numbers will moderate, but there's been no evidence of that lately. You know, Terry, before the break, I said to you, what about the I have a granddaughter now. If I wanted to put money in some sort of retirement account for her, how does somebody do that? You said
no. Here's what you do. Let's just take it very simply. You can open an IRA, a Roth IRA, because the kid doesn't need a deduction, with up to the amount of earned income the child had. So if your grandchild gets to the point where he or she is working for a few hours every week and spends some money, you ask, how much did you get in your W-2? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to open a IRA account and the S&P 500 fund at Fidelity for you, and you won't be able to take it out, as I said, till you're 59 and a half. So that's your retirement fund, baby. Okay, but until that age where they start having earned income, so you can make the contribution out of your money to their IRA and gift that to them. But up until that point, where you want to be saving is a 529 account, because all that money grows tax-free for college. So that's a great investment, because education's a terrific investment.
Okay, that's still not what I had in mind, though. I mean, I guess I should help fund their education, sure, but I want to just put money in some sort of non-discretionary savings account that isn't dedicated to education for that.
You know, we used to do that. Listen, here's the big problem with the tax code. Remember, we had some discussions about the tax code. The tax code now says that, first of all, in Illinois, if you put money in a custodial account for your little granddaughter or grandson, that money becomes the child's at age 18. That's something to think about. You were thinking Princeton, she's thinking Portion, that's it. But second of all, if the family does apply for financial aid, money in a child's name in a custodial account weighs seven times more heavily against the family in the financial aid formula. So you used to hear about UGMA, Uniform Gift to Minors Act accounts. We don't do that anymore. We put money in a 529 account because it's easy, because you can grow it aggressively, and because all the money comes out tax-free for college.
One last question.
That's the thing you should be doing.
Harvey wanted to know, is there a cap on unemployment compensation?
I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. If you go to IDES, unemployment in Illinois, there is a cap on how much you can get. I mean, if you're unemployed from a million-dollar job, you're only getting a limited amount of benefits.
Got it. I'm out of time. Terry, let's take more time with more callers and listeners next week. TerrySavage.com is the website. As always, thanks for your help today, Terry.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
There she goes, and here we is. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Amazon says it hired more than 15,000 people in Illinois in 2020. That's an increase of about 72% in its statewide workforce. Amazon's surge in hiring came as it opened new warehouses in the Chicago area to meet a jump in demand. It also added employees in Illinois at corporate offices, its Whole Foods Market grocery chain, Amazon Books, and five-star stores. More than 36,000 people worked for Amazon at the end of 2020. Crane says it could now be the largest private sector employer in Metro Chicago. Poverty in the U.S. was at a pandemic high last month. Researchers at the University of Chicago and the University of Notre Dame found that over a year into the COVID-19 pandemic, poverty continues for many Americans and has gotten worse for some. Last month, the unemployment rate fell, but the poverty rate rose to more than 11%, the highest since the start of the pandemic. Black poverty was nearly double the overall rate at more than 21%. Childhood poverty last month soared to more than 17%. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food, Steve Alexander.
Hey, how about the business of boba? Are you a boba drinker, John?
Don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I didn't either. I saw it around, wasn't sure. I thought I was too old and too uncool to even inquire about it. But I have some distressing news about boba because of where it comes from.
Boba originated in Taiwan.
That's Janelle Bitker, a food reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who says boba refers to both a drink and its key ingredient. Tapioca balls.
Usually a milky tea or maybe a smoothie, and then it will come with these chewy black tapioca balls on the bottom, and the balls are also called boba.
It's also known as bubble tea or pearl milk tea, and the problem is there's a shortage of boba. Some shops have run out because container ships coming from Taiwan, the source of all boba, well, they're all jammed up in West Coast ports. They can't get unloaded. Boba hasn't caught on in Chicago the way it has along the West Coast, but there are several shops in Chinatown and scattered elsewhere. One store I spoke with said they are running low. Others said they're okay for now. When will the shortage end?
Some suppliers I talked to were hopeful that it could clear up within a few weeks, and others think it might take as long as 4 months. So it might be a while before we're in the clear.
Of course, whether the shortage is a big deal for you depends on just how much you need your boba. As part of the research for this story, I had my first boba. I had a green tea blended ice thing. There's a photo of it on the website, by the way. The little tapioca balls of boba at the bottom, to my surprise, were pretty good. I'm a fan.
It's very yummy, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's very good.
I'm still not even sure what it is. So is it a liquid? It's like a glass of tea then?
No, think of a smoothie. It's frozen. Just think of a smoothie, but it's they have different flavors. But the key is that these tapioca balls, about the size of a really large blueberry, they sit at the bottom, and then the straw that you use is big enough for these things to go right through the straw and into your mouth, and it's like, whoa.
They're kind of like Jell-O balls, but you don't know if you're supposed to just slurp them or chew them.
Yeah, or both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
but
yummy.
Anyway, that's boba, John.
We've
learned a lot here today. let's go to the Chicago Board of Trade, where concerns about supply and weather continue to push the numbers higher. Wheat right now is like gold. It's up 17 cents, $6.78 a bushel. Beans are up 23 at $14.80. Corn is trading at $6.09, up 17 and a quarter cents. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature is it's National Chocolate Covered Cashews Day. That's the business of food and boba on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us. Some interesting topics, if you don't mind, Amy. I wanted you to start with the Red Line rebuild in the city on the north side. What's the news here? What's going on with that?
Yeah, I thought that might be where you wanted to start today. And so the massive construction job that is part of the Red Line modernization project, a very, very big portion of that will kick off next month. So people should start thinking ahead. Now, the good news is once all this is finished, all of the stations will be accessible to disabled riders. So it's for an excellent reason, like part of this modernization project is that everybody will be able to access the Red Line. However, in the process of getting there, there's going to be a couple of years that are going to make for some kind of, headache moments on the north side. So plans that were released earlier today, stations at Lawrence, Berwyn, Argyle, and Bryn Mawr, they're going to close on May 16th until near the end of 2024. That's a big swath of land. New stations are being built during that time. temporary stations will be open only at Argyle and Bryn Mawr of those. And the amount, the things that are being undertaken here, it's really quite a bit on this, just this 1.5 mile stretch in Edgewater and Uptown. Part of that is there's congestion, right? Because the red line and the purple line run on the same track. At some point, the brown line is there, right? It's kind of a lot. So we've seen some of this already. At Belmont, there's the bridge that's happening to kind of divert the so that the red and purple line trains can still go without having to wait on the brown line. But this is kind of some next level stuff. So the old structures have to be hauled away. And what's going to happen is the eastern half of the track structure, the first 2 years of this, the eastern half of the track structure will be hauled off and then rebuilt. And then towards the end of 2022, the same thing will happen on the western half. So we're going to be dealing with this construction for kind of a while. Another part of that is that support beams essentially have to be 60 to 80 foot holes need to be drilled, and then support columns need to be anchored in there with concrete in order to do this build. So as you can imagine, there's going to be kind of some headaches involved with the Red Line CTA. At the end of it, you know, there's some plans that were released by the CTA. The new stations look modern and very beautiful, very clean, a lot larger. And these are some track upgrades that have been needing to happen for a while. But we're going to have, you know, I think the name of the game, if you're a Red Line rider from the north side, is going to be plan ahead, plan to leave early. Because there's going to be a lot of track delays and things like that as we have so much construction happening all at once on the north side.
It's a project valued at over $1 billion, and that's the CTA investing that money pre-pandemic, but hoping that the ridership comes back to justify all of this infrastructure upgrading. Amazon is bringing palm scanning to Whole Foods. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like. So some privacy, data privacy folks are already kind of expressing some consternation about collecting this kind of biometric data. So it's essentially a little scanner. As you would go into an Amazon store or as you're checking out from Whole Foods, you run your palm over it and it reads your palm, and you would have already linked it to a credit card. The first time you use it, it would ask you for a credit card that you'd swipe, and it would link your palm to that card. This has been tested in some of the Amazon Go, you know, the it's sort of like a bodega, but it's understaffed. It's unstaffed, rather. They've been tested in some of those. This is going to first roll out in Whole Foods stores in Seattle, but then roll out to some other locations. I think it's going to be very interesting, right, to kind of watch how this goes and see what happens exactly. We've seen a lot of new technology go into Whole Foods stores once Amazon acquired it. We started seeing that. You know, a lot of people, you know, scan a QR code from your phone when you go to Whole Foods, and it gives you some deals and things like that if you're an Amazon Prime member. This is the next level of that, because this is your palm. Now, I can absolutely see that it would be convenient if you, oh, I don't have my wallet with me, I still want to get my stuff. But again, some data privacy folks have already expressed a lot of concerns about this level of biometric data, how it would be used, how it would be protected.
But you're saying,
like,
are you saying that my palm would be used as payment? It would read my palm, know my credit card number, and then debit from my account based on the lines on my hand?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes, that's exactly how it would work.
No, that can't be.
It would be, yeah. Wow. I know, it's a little creepy, yeah. But the first time you do it, you link it to a card, and it would stay linked to that card.
I'm looking at my palm right now, and I'm thinking that is unique, probably, right? So maybe it's protected. I'm as interested in the fact that they can do that as the privacy issues. Follow up on that next time we talk. Amy, it's a fascinating story to follow. We appreciate your help today.
You bet. Thanks so much, John.